Let's bring the meeting to order. We have a quorum. And first order of business is approval of the minutes for February 24th. Representative Junkie, did you get a chance to look at those minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair. I move approval.
Minister, move for approval. Any additions or corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Mr. Reinholz, you have something in the package you'd like to just bring our attention to?
Mr. Chairman, members, you should have had in the folder for today's items a sheet that at the top of it is titled Ag, Environment, Natural Resources, 0607, Governor's Recommendations for New Receipts. I'm sorry, not the easiest to read, I see, as it was copied here. What this was, I put this together in response to the request from Representative Junkie last week, on which he asked for information on the increases in receipts. What it has here, if you follow the column on the far left, it lists by each of the departments that are under the jurisdiction of the committee the different receipt fees. Some of them are, most of them are really fees, but some of them are really more called receipts, so that's why I titled that, they would cover both. It lists the proposal in the governor's budget, the receipt change item. The center portion where there are dollars indicates the dollars that would be raised through the change, and then which fund it's from. And then I really, the answer I was providing over on the far right column under the proposed use of the new funds, I gave a description of which of what those funds were indicated they would be used for. And in making that description, I tried to indicate if it was new activity or if it was current activity. And I would have to say in some cases, I could not tell from the information provided by the department if it was completely new. In some instances, there was a mixture, and I tried to indicate that in there. I would just say, if you take a look at that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to get more information on them. You will find that there are quite a few of them that, as you saw last week, it is not necessarily new activity that the funds are going forward. In some cases, it's an activity where funding is also proposed to be decreased. In other cases, it's really funding inflationary costs. And I tried to indicate that. I will email every one of the members a copy of this also, so it's easier to read. It was easy to read off of my computer in the photocopy, and that it became difficult.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Reynolds? Okay. And then I believe Mr. Helen prepared an item. If you'd like to explain that.
Mr. Chair and members, it was in relation to Representative Junkie's question to Representative McNamara's bill on the procedure to establish a road when surrounded by public land, and he wanted to know about the cartway law that's in the highway statute. So I asked John Williams, who's a colleague in the transportation analyst, to look into the cartway law. And basically the cartway law would allow the town board to establish a cartway when petitioned by a landowner who has no access to a public road from his land or her land except by water or by going over someone else's land. So that allows roadways to be established on private land. The DNR's situation was on public land, specifically in our land, and so the difference in Representative McNamara's bill is that it is public land, and as they testified, they get about 10 cases like this a year, so the cartway law basically applies to private land.
Okay. All right, any questions? Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, I think, for Mr. Helen. If it's in an unorganized township, does it then fall? It's still on private land, but does it then fall back on the county?
The Cartway Law only, yes, it does. There is a clause that says, in an unorganized territory, the Board of County Commissioners shall act as the town board.
Okay, but it's still private. This is
right.
The Cartway Law only.
Private land.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Well, that's my question, too, again, just to clarify. So they cannot petition for a cartway across any public land, just state public land, county, city land? Is it any public land? Or, I mean, it doesn't, John Williams did a nice job here, but in this memo, he didn't mention the public land. And you're saying it does not ever apply to public land. I can't petition for a cartway across any public land in the state.
Mr. Chair, I'll have to look into it more because I can't answer that definitively.
Right.
So I don't think it does, but it's a long law and yeah. I'm not familiar with it. It basically talks about private property owners, though. And I don't see anything just scanning it that talks about public land.
And, Mr. Chair, just for the edification of the committee, too, and I think this was a good memo, and Representative McNamara was indicating last week, too, that, well, if you have access by water, then you're not entitled to it. That's not true according to this, and I didn't think so either. You have a right to get access to your land if it's landlocked in this state, and water is not access necessarily.
All right. Thank you very much. We will now return to our agenda. And this morning we have budget presentations, and we're going to be starting with Department of Natural Resources and Commissioner Merriam.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. As the chair mentioned, it's my responsibility this morning to kick off, I believe it's 3 days of budget presentations. And I'm going to start out by talking a little bit about our mission statement, our organization, and Deputy Commissioner Holston here with me will address those as well as a breakdown of our financial resources. And let me just comment at the outset, Mr. Chairman, and I think most of you know this. We have Bob Meyer as our Director of Legislative Affairs, who spends full-time plus over here when the legislature is in session. Deputy Commissioner Holston spends a lot of time here, and I just want you to all understand that any of our people, our division directors, you'll see a lot of them. But our job is to facilitate your decision-making, and in order to do that, don't hesitate to call upon myself or anyone else who you don't see around the Capitol. We think we know what you're doing is important, and we want to facilitate that. We will be here. We'll rearrange our schedules to accommodate the committee or any of the members or the staff individually as well with any questions. So, I've had some people comment, how come we see Deputy Commissioner Holston over here all the time? We never see you. I'm not trying to avoid trouble, Mr. Chairman, but I'm not out looking for it either. So just let me know if you need my presence here, if you would like it. And that's the same, as I say, with any member of our senior management team or indeed any person of the Department of Natural Resources. So with that, we will, in making the main budget presentations, will be each of our division directors and our bureau administrators and their key staff person. They will talk to you about core functions and also address, and I'll say a little bit more about this in a few minutes, the key performance indicators from our conservation agenda. And, of course, talk about the budget initiatives that we've brought forward this year. Starting first with our mission statement, and I know that all of you are pretty familiar with this, and we think this captures the role of the department pretty well. It's our job to work with the citizens of the state to conserve and manage the state's natural resources, and to provide for outdoor recreational opportunities as well as for commercial uses of those resources, all of that in a manner that's done in a sustainable fashion. And We hope you will see that much of what is developed is our budget presentation flows principally from that, as well as the need to balance the interests of a diverse group of stakeholders. We also will emphasize significantly what we described as fund integrity, that we think we have the fiduciary responsibility along with you to make sure that we're spending the money, the many diverse sources that we collect resources from, in a way that matches with the expectations of the purposes for which it was collected. Starting first with a little bit about our structure, and we talk about a balanced matrix for our structure where we divide responsibilities organizationally, both geographically and based upon discipline. Starting with the geographic responsibility, we've got the state divided into four geographic regions, depicted there, northwest, northeast, central, and southern, headquartered in Bemidji, Grand Rapids, St. Paul, and New Ulm, respectively. And our objective has been and will be to empower to the extent practical, the decisions to be made as close to the ground as we can. And also we charge our regional directors and our regional management teams, as well as those of us in the central office, with what we call integrated resource management. We need to collaborate and integrate the decisions that we're making to utilize the resources to the extent that makes sense. Talking a bit about the organization of the Department of Natural Resources, depicted on that chart, you see on the extensively on the right-hand side our eight divisions that you'll be hearing from individually over the course of this week, and down the chart also our regional operations, which affect each of those divisional disciplines, and then to the left our administration, which is comprised of our four administrative bureaus that flow out of that box that's labeled operations support, our Bureau of Office of Management and Bureau of Office of Management and Budget Services, our Human Resources Bureau, our Bureau of Information and Education, and what you have heretofore known as the Facilities and Operations, or FOS Bureau, we now call our Management Resources. So we may slip up and refer to the name that we've become accustomed to, but we think a better description is Management Resources, and we've renamed that bureau. I talked about the principles used in the executive branch process of building our budget, and they flow from those four described key principles that you see there. Consistent with our mission statement, we've said first and foremost our responsibility is to conserve the long-term health of the state's natural resources. We need, we recognize to meet customer demand to provide services for those which our citizens demand and expect. We also recognize that we have a key role to play in delivering sustainable levels of products and services that are important for the state's economy. And again, the principle I may have mentioned of earlier, that fiduciary responsibility of fund integrity. 2 years ago, the governor charged the department, as he did all of the agencies of state government, as you see, quoting the governor there, to manage for results and develop indicators and benchmarks that measure results, and using that product and process to guide the decisions that affect our work. We've taken that charge, and over the course of the last 2 years, developed our conservation agenda. And we'll be talking more about that later as well. But in that, we frame up our performance work plan to communicate what it is that we intend to do and how we should expect to be measured as to how well we're doing. And that conservation agenda, we have it out on the internet and in hard copy. And we currently have 85 indicators and targets that we use to clearly state our priorities in specific and measurable terms to enable our stakeholders, ourselves, and you to measure our progress and document our accountability and to clarify those expectations with all of our stakeholders. I want to emphasize that we view this not as a completed project. We put it out in hard copy a year ago. It's in the process of being reprinted because we've made some additions to it. And we talked to our managers about this being a continuous work in progress and invite them and their staff to develop new or different indicators as we move forward. Just as a an example of one of those that we use to talk about connecting the resources and connecting the solutions, we believe that it's necessary to accomplish our mission that we can't effectively manage any of these items in isolation, that they're all interconnected and that would seem quite apparent. And we apply our integrated resource management to recognize and address the trade-offs and connections among those 85 connectors contained in that document. With that, Mr. Chairman, for the next few minutes, I'd like to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Holston to start getting into some of the big picture budget items that he's prepared to share.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Mark Holston. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. What I want to do today, before we get into individual divisions and those activities, is just give you some baseline information, talk a little bit about where we get our money from and how those monies are allocated. The first slide, I believe, in your packet talks about the 06-07 governor's budget that covers the direct, the open, and statutory appropriations that the budget is presented to you. This is going to be a $636 million biennial budget. We primarily get our resources from three sources. I mean, we have some other ones, but you can see on this pie chart where we get the bulk of our money from. General fund is about 32% of our of our budget. Game and Fish Fund equals about 29%. Natural Resources Fund is about 20%. Then we have some other issues in there, Special Revenue Fund, federal funds that come into the agency, Environment Natural Resources Fund, and some other funds that are out there, and we'll talk more about those later. But it shows, as you have either have or will be talking about, or as some of you have sat on other finance divisions, seeing how the state finances its entities or its agencies, you see a very diverse funding package for the Department of Natural Resources. That diversity, though, also has ties attached to it from those funding sources. First one I want to just walk through briefly for you is the Game and Fish Fund. And what you see here in this pie chart is the different sources of revenue that make up the Game and Fish Fund. The biggest portion is license fees. That is your hunting license, your fishing license, your trapping license. Those are contained, or the foundations of those licenses go into, or the foundation of the Game and Fish Fund. They make up the largest portion. Then we start to deal with some other revenues, such as the federal sport, fish, and wildlife funds. These are the excise taxes on your boats, on your firearms, on your ammunition, on your fishing tackle that you buy. That surcharge is done, and those dollars are federally then reappropriated back to the state based upon a calculation and a formula of how many license sales you have. We receive roughly $40 million, $39 million for the biennium coming back from the federal, from that part. Stamps and surcharges. This is, when you buy your hunting license, this is your duck stamp, your state duck stamp, your pheasant stamp, your trout stamp on your fishing license, your turkey stamp. These revenues are deposited into the special accounts within the Game and Fish Fund. There's a surcharge also on your small game license that goes for the acquisition of land that is also contained in this area. One of the other areas that I'm going to talk about in a few minutes is lottery in lieu. For some members, you're very familiar with what lottery in lieu is and where it came from. For others of you, I'm guessing this is one of the first times you may have seen this. I'm going to go into some detail. But those are specific dollars that are deposited into the Game and Fish Fund at roughly $20 million for the biennium. Then we have a 2.4 that come from permits and the sale of natural resources, and then some other miscellaneous revenue. That makes up the Game and Fish Fund. Now, each one of these areas has specific, many of these areas have very specific statutory guidelines on how these dollars may or can be allocated. And one of the things that we have worked at very hard under this administration is making sure the integrity of the Game and Fish Fund, that those dollars are used in a way that benefits the user who pays those costs or writes those fees or pays those license fees and use those for those specific purposes. The other fund that we need to talk about, as you'll hear about over the next couple days, is the Natural Resource Fund. This even gets more complicated as you look at this pie chart. Starting with the largest block on the left is the Water Recreation Account. This is money that is deposited into the Natural Resources Fund from your boat and license fees. When you register your boat, those dollars are deposited into this account and are used for water access, boating-related type activities. The next one is the snowmobile account, where those registration dollars are deposited in here, and those dollars are spent on the state snowmobile trail system and the grant and aid system across the state. Same with the all-terrain vehicle as we go around the pie. Land acquisition account, when the Department of Natural Resources sells specific pieces of property, we're charged statutorily to take those receipts from those sales, deposit them, and reinvest them back into land acquisition, and they stay within this account. Non-game wildlife, this is your chickadee checkoff on your tax write-off or your tax income tax statement. Off-highway motorcycles, this is registration fee for there. Off-road vehicles is another sticker registration. Lottery in lieu, here's another lottery in lieu that I'm going to come back to in a few minutes, but a portion of that is contained in the natural resources account. State park account. This is money that is deposited from your, when you buy a park permit or your camping fees, or if you buy merchandise in the park, they are deposited in this account, in the natural resources account. Lottery in lieu for local trail grants. We'll come back to that. LawCon is federal money. It's land and water conservation monies that come from the federal government to be used for land conservation work. Cross Country Ski Pass money. Forest Management Account. This was created last year by the legislature. You created this. This is allowing us to diversify our funding for that particular division. As we go through these divisions, you'll see, as you see the complexity from the Game and Fish Fund, the Natural Resource Fund, and the other funds, general and others, how they overlap specific divisions are all treated differently. Forestry was one that was very heavily dependent upon the general fund in the previous biennium. We've been working to diversify that funding for that particular division. You see this here. This pie also represents this current budget. This is not current spending. This is the budget that we are proposing. So the pie is broken down by how we are proposing it. We are going to be asking for a land management, mineral management, and burning permits in the upcoming budget, and we'll be talking about those over the next couple days. But that is the basis of the Natural Resources Fund. If there's any questions for that. Members, the next one is the lottery in lieu. And let me just talk a little bit about that. Lottery in lieu, I need to take you back to the late 1980s when the citizens voted for the lottery to be established. I'm going to paraphrase and break it down real simply. Some issues within the state, those monies were divided. Monies were to be allocated to the Environment Natural Resources Fund, and monies were to be allocated to the General Fund. Shortly after the creation of the lottery, the state ran into some budgetary issues and tried to figure out a way where they could capture some additional revenue and deposit that into the General Fund. One of the concepts was to put a sales tax on the sale of lottery tickets, the $1 lottery ticket that you have. The decision was made by the legislature not to put a new tax on top of a lottery ticket, so that when you went in and put your dollar down, it wouldn't be a dollar, 6.5, it would be a dollar. How do you capture that 6.5 cents? You put a surcharge or a in lieu of tax, the 6.5 cent surcharge, fee, or whatever you want to call it. They captured that 6.5 cents off of that dollar and deposited into the general fund. In the late 90s, early 2000 legislature, monies became available that were called the lottery in lieu of sales tax. Those general fund dollars were then appropriated back under this statutory formula. They took those dollars and we divided it. 50% was deposited into the Game and Fish Fund. It is called the Heritage Enhancement. These are dollars specifically, as I in the previous slide talked about, are separated out in the Game and Fish Fund. But those monies are deposited, 50% are deposited in the Game and Fish Fund. The other 50% is deposited into the Natural Resources Account. 22.5 are statutorily appropriated to state parks and state trails. 22.5% are deposited for metro regional parks. 3% is for local trail grants, and then the zoos have 2% statutory appropriation. What I want to do here is just kind of, we're going to be talking about that. We have some agency change items, some division change items that relate to this, and I just wanted to break this out and give you an understanding of where this came from.
Before you continue, are there any questions on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the graph that you have, the pie chart that you have on there now, that the money that makes that up is all from the 6.5% of the lottery. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, it's not all of it.
Oh.
100% of those receipts are not allocated to this activity. The legislature over the years has captured some of those revenues or some of those dollars and have used them in other ways. So right now, that $39.9 million represents roughly 72.4% of that total pot of money.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Prior to the 2000 session when we changed this and moved the money over, where were those funds being used?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, they were in the general fund.
Just in the general.
Yeah.
A simple question.
Representative Dillon.
Commissioner, make sure I understand. Of a dollar, 6.5% is going to, 6.5 cents is going to this. Is that what you said?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, 72% of that 6.5 cents.
Gotcha.
Thank you. Any And just before we move off of this subject, remember, you should know that when the lottery was put in place, it was supposed to be zero going to the general fund. And it was actually 50% to the Greater Minnesota Corporation and 50% to the Environmental Trust Fund. When we ran into financial trouble, then 10% was taken from the Environmental Trust Fund. And the other 50% that was supposed to go to Greater Minnesota Corporation, it went defunct for a wide variety of reasons, and so that defaulted to the general fund. So we ended up with 60% of the lottery dollars essentially going into general fund, of which we were told when this whole thing was coming about that nothing would ever go to the general fund. So that's why my patience gets thin on this particular issue, because I felt I was really lied to when this was all being developed years ago, and very, very frustrated with it. I commend former Representative Holston for really getting a hold of the lottery in lieu of dollars. It was underneath his leadership that was at least that portion was corrected and got it pulled out of the general fund and dedicated back towards environmental purposes. So, Representative Pennis.
Mr. Chair, so the rest of it, 72.4% is accounted for here, and the remainder then goes into the general fund. Now, is that correct?
Representative Holston.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Holston.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, please proceed.
Okay. Members, the next one is the pie chart represents the 06-07 budget as it relates to how it is distributed to the individual divisions or entities within the agency. Now you see down in the lower right corner, the largest block is Fish and Wildlife. That is $60 million, or 25% of our budget. Forestry is $123 million. Parks is at $77 million. Enforcement at $60 million. Trails and Waterways at $57 million. Operations support, that's our internal support areas, at $49 million. Lands and minerals, $47 million. Ecological services, $32 million. And waters at $27 million. I'll be going, each director from these particular charts or these particular pieces will be coming up and talking to you over the next couple days about their particular division, their particular budget. I'll be going through any change items that relate to either reductions of general fund or new change items that are coming into play. But as you can see from the previous pie charts, the variety of different funds, the complexities of that, they don't fit neatly in each pie. Some of those funds are distributed across different divisions, and Game and Fish is used within other divisions that support Game and Fish activity. Natural Resources account is distributed across these divisions based upon their particular activity. Some general fund goes into each particular division also. So, as we proceed through the next couple of days, ask questions, we can try to clarify this very complicated budget, and we'll try to help you walk through it. There is a slide in your packet that just articulates the division directors who will be testifying with me over the next couple days. But I believe we are going to start off, Mr. Chair, with the Division of Parks. I believe it's going to be our first unit up.
Before we go there, members, I believe Deputy Commissioner Holston will be with us for the next 2 or 3 days, but I believe Commissioner Merriam probably wants to go to other activities, and I was wondering if there are any specific questions we have of Commissioner Merriam before he would leave the testifying table. Representative Wagenius.
No specific question. I am pleased with your way you quantify things if you're wanting to create a sustainable way of life. But we have some conflicts that we need to address forthwith or forthright. And I look at the Ducks folks, and their concern about our using our wetlands in western Minnesota to raise fries. And that's not sustainable. And so I think we have to, as we're presenting to people, and let Minnesotans know where some of the conflicts are. So where the conflicts are between the ducks folks and the fishing folks, so we can do some problem solving. So it's wonderful to hear the good and positive words, but I think it's also important to put our problems on the table and to put them on directly so we can do problem solving. So that's my concern about reading this. I mean, that's an example of one of the problems I see, that it would just be better just to talk about it forthwith.
Commissioner Mayor.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, just to respond if I may, and I think that's a good example. And our daily life is replete with conflict use, and there are significant public policy issues involved in how we balance those conflicting objectives. When you get one as complicated as that particular one, the trade-off to the extent that it exists between waterfowl production and aquaculture is one that, as a matter of fact, we have on our agenda this afternoon internally to have some discussion about, because I know that we have some disagreement, lack of understanding among internally. And so in order to best be in the best position to respond to the questions you're going to ask about that, we need to understand it better. But I agree with you that those are the type of things we need to talk about, whether it's aquaculture and waterfowl, or agriculture and habitat. We need to approach them in an honest, forthright fashion. But agree more.
If I could
follow. Representative Wagenius.
With that in mind, I think it would be good if we had a list of those conflicting issues that we had to deal with. I mean, what are your top 10? I may be wrong in placing the conflict between our ducks folks and our fishing folks in the top 10. I may be wrong about that, but I would like to know, what are these things that we need to be talking about? Because it's hard to do a budget without knowing what some of the underlying problems are. In fact, it's impossible for us to do that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I think that's an appropriate request that will force us to sit down and rank them, because I'm sure I could recite well over 10, but to actually sit down with our managers and decide which are the top 10 challenges in use conflict.
Mr. Chairman, that may be the wrong number, but we need to know the conflicts underneath this budget, because we can't appropriately talk about it without knowing.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Commissioner. Really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Now we'll have Parks and Recreation, Director Cortland Nelson. Identify yourself for the record and proceed to the presentation. Page 99 is where we start.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Cortland Nelson. I'm Director of State Parks. I, like some of you, am relatively new. This is a week past my first anniversary of being director. I was a forest-like guy who went west about 35 years ago and spent my career back with Utah and Arizona State Parks, and returned a year ago with Commissioner Holston and his team. So I'm very pleased to be able to speak to you today. I've got a short presentation regarding our agency and the the direction that we're going, some problems that we are currently having, and we'll conclude with some issues regarding budget, and would certainly entertain any questions that you might have. The system that we have in state parks is has been built for over 110 years. This map that you see in front of you depicts with the icons how our parks are distributed. If you would look at that, you certainly would reach a couple of conclusions. One is that we have a wide distribution of our state parks around the state. They exist in all corners. We have a number of programs that are related to the ecological area that those parks are in. That's why they're shaded differently. We have activities down in our prairie zone. We have activities in our deciduous, our big river zone, and also up in the coniferous forests, the northern woods. And I'll be coming back to this point two or three times during my presentation, but I like this graphic depiction because I think it shows a couple of things. One, the distribution of parks, and two, the different areas that we are located in. And as you are more aware than I, the unique situation that Minnesota is geologically, and the biomes that we have in our state are certainly very unique. Some of the factoids of state parks: we have 72 state park and recreation areas around the state. We have 8 million visitors to our state park system. The best indicator of that is the sale of our annual passes, and we sell about 105,000 to 108,000 annual passes each year. That tells us two things. One is that we have a good, steady customer base. It also tells us that rate is not increasing with the growth in population. So we have a job to do in connecting ourselves with new users of state parks, and I'll be talking about that in a minute. Our annual revenue from all sources is $12.8 million in fiscal year 04. Another measurement that I think is important, one out of every three Minnesotans visits a state park. That maps out to about 1.7 million residents who one way or another find themselves into a state park. There are a couple of contrasts within DNR that might help you understand what that number means. We sell about 500,000 fishing licenses a year. We have also 16% of our visitation comes from outside of Minnesota. That may be Iowa, that may be Wisconsin. We have a number of Canadian visitors who come down from the north. That is a fairly high percentage of resident visitation. Most states that I am aware of, and certainly the two that I've worked in, had a higher percentage of what we would call out-of-state tourism than Minnesota does. And we are working with the new tourism organization to try and assist them to attract and draw people in from out-of-state. Our park customers spend $178 million a year from their own survey in the local communities. That's an important number that we have a value added that goes beyond the revenues that we bring in state park. Another frame of reference for that, the fishing industry has about 10 times that impact on the local economy. And of course, many of those fishermen are people who also hold state park passes. So the economics of parks, similar to some of our sister divisions, is quite strong, and that's something that we probably don't talk enough about. This, by the way, is from the University of Minnesota survey that was conducted a couple of years ago. Another responsibility that we have that some of you may not be aware of is that we manage over 360 archaeological sites, 62 historic district and landmarks, and hundreds of historic buildings. Many of those come from the CCC era, the WPA era. They come from the settlement era. And these are our responsibilities to preserve and protect. It takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, and we take that work very seriously. And then underneath the map, the final bullet, that you can see that we have a number of responsibilities as it relates to our natural resources, and put a lot of time and effort into that. Our primary mission, our primary responsibility, you can see spelled out here in the bullets, Certainly to preserve and protect is a key mission for ourselves. We are laboratories for research. We are areas of concern when it comes to threatened or endangered species. We are areas where we have relationships with over 50 organizations that conduct scientific experiments. Going back to the very beginning of the state park system, that is one of the most important, if not the most important responsibility, is the representation of Minnesota's finest natural and cultural resources. We also provide recreation. We try and protect places and also put smiles on faces. So we host these 8 million visitors each year, try and provide them an enjoyable time, protect them, give them some educational interpretive opportunities, and send them away as hopefully satisfied customers. Recreation is a big part of what we do. I mentioned earlier the management of our state parks and recreation areas. We have about 250,000 acres that are within our park boundaries. We have fee title to around 217 or 18,000 of those acres. The rest is trust lands, some private property that is within the parks, within the park boundaries. This year we do not have a boundary bill that will be coming before you. For those of you who are new, annually there is an effort to try and clarify boundaries and also to deal with some acquisition issues, and we are not going to be doing any boundary work this year. We're going to work more closely with DNR in a coordinated effort, and as well as our supporting support groups. But we are certainly a significant landowner in the state. If you would be of interest, I've got some comparative data around that that I can show you later. We also, for the last several years, have managed the state forest campground and recreation areas. These are both overnight campgrounds as well as day use areas, and we take care of those responsibilities for state forests. Our trends, I'm going to pull this down here a little bit.
Excuse me, Mr. Cortland, we have a question, Representative Bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, how many, do you know how many acres of trust land are in your parks?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bill, I do not know that right off the top of my head. I'll go find that for you before the meeting's over.
Thank you.
I mentioned the natural features that we have responsibility for. As you will hear in the succeeding days, a number of agencies are involved in protecting these plant and animal species. We are involved with a number of partners in all corners of the state. We also are re-upping our efforts to develop resource plans for the protection of our natural resources. We are anxious to have our actions follow plans that have been agreed upon by our partners. As an example, at Jay Cook and at St. Croix, at Banning and at Moose Lake, we have large holdings relative to the size of our agency, and we have not been able to get established resource protection plans for those parks. So we have taken from our resource dollars and employed a young individual who is going to help us put resource management plans in place at those four parks. That's an example of the work that we feel is critical right now. Recreation demand for the agency, these are statistics that have come out of some research that was conducted by the department. I'll let you read those. Some of them are fairly straight ahead and would relate to ourselves as well as other service providers in the recreation and outdoor industry. That last bullet about the lack of time, that is very key in terms of how we can help and assist our customers. We have made an effort to put our reservation system so that it is user-friendly as possible, so that individuals can make reservations to come visit our parks. We also try and provide online information that helps them make as good use of their time as possible. But this is a key issue, I think, for all of us who are providing service, and we continue to try and work at that. In terms of the park features, we are always trying to improve the quality of service that we have for our visitors, whether it's providing a welcome to them or providing some type of service or equipment or in terms of the programs that we have for them. You can see that in the picture down at Forestville Mystery Cave, that's an example of some of the unique and interesting services that we provide to our park visitors.
Mr. Thomas, we have another question. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question, Mr. Nelson, about the Director Nelson, about the resource plans for the different parks. Can you say a little bit more about that? Are they? Do we have resource plans for all the parks? Are some of them are missing? And what is the status of that again? Because that seems like such a basic need of the state parks, particularly in light of the invasive species threats.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a very good question. We have approximately 3/4 of our state parks who have operating management plans from which we drive our programs. We have some that have not been updated in a long time. For instance, those 4 that I mentioned. They are not down to the level of detail that we need to have, and so our resolve is to improve that planning effort so that our actions are in pursuit of the goals that we need for that particular park. We, at our current funding level, are able to fund about 37% of our targets that we would have in an ideal world. So in one sense, I think we are short of the mark and need your assistance and those of our partners in order to improve that. In another sense, and I have to tell you, as a person who's recently arrived on the scene, I'm very impressed with the work that has been done. I feel that there is a high quality of resource protection currently in place. We are aware of the problems. We're asking the right questions. But, yes, we have a long way to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
These 3 pictures represent, again, the 3 driving forces that we have in the agency. The picture on the left, of course, is our responsibility to protect the outstanding features that we have in the state. That picture of Pigeon River up at Grand Portage is an icon in our state, and we are hard at work to try and protect and promote those features. On the far right, we are involved in a lot of scientific work, as I mentioned earlier. And in the middle there, you can see our young interpreter assisting an individual in the park. That's the people part of what we do. We are the face that goes along with that natural resource experience. And we feel that that is an area that we have been short of the mark and we need to improve upon also.
Excuse me, Mr. Nelson, Representative Dillia, have a question.
Back on the trust question, I wanted to get. How does the trust get compensated for the land? I mean, how does the trust get compensated for the land that's inside the parks that is trust land?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we make a payment for those properties and goes into the trust as any leasee of that property would.
Is that a percentage of the value, Mr. Chairman, or is that how is that determined?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could defer to my partner here about how the trust finances work.
Mr. Chair, Representative, sorry, I was just getting a note. I wasn't paying attention to what you said.
It's all right. I'm doing that all the time.
Question, Mr. Representative Joe?
Yeah. How is the payment decided? How much per acre? Is it on the value, or how is it decided? From the trust land to the trust.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, I'm
from the park to the trust.
Refer to Bill Bryce. Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, to your previous question, there are roughly 5,700 acres of school trust fund land contained within state parks. Last year, we were able to exchange a little over 660 some acres, and are continuing that exchange process. And, hope to fulfill that that pressure. I think it is also important to note that it is the legislature who has created those state park boundaries and whether knowingly or unknowingly put those trust fund lands in state park status. It is something that we do need to sort out and work out over the years.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I certainly wouldn't want to blame DNR for anything.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm not saying we're going to help him. But as a former member, I didn't always know whether or not those are trust fund lands or not. I will tell you from the agency's perspective, up until the last several years, I don't think the agency knew wholeheartedly where exactly those trust fund lands were or were not. And it has been a process over the years of questions, pretty hard questions, where the agency has really had to try to address the concerns that you've been bringing up this year and in previous years, have mapped and identified where those lands are exactly, and can articulate exactly what the problem is, and begin working towards a resolution to that. But, Mr. Chair, to his previous question, Bill Bryce.
Mr. Rice, welcome to the committee. Do you have the answer to his puzzle here?
Oh, perhaps. Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Bryce, and I'm the Director of Lands and Minerals. And prior to this biennium, there was about 6,360 acres. There's currently 5,702. We exchanged 660 out of Crosby and Tattacooch in the last biennium. We're working on exchanging on a plan for Savannah Portage and also for Schoolcraft, which amounts to about 3,000 acres. There are a couple state parks where you would never want to exchange. Crosby Canyon Country Recreation Area and Hill Annex are also sources of income for minerals and other things, and you wouldn't necessarily want to exchange those lands. And we're inconsistent on how we charge state parks for the use of trust fund lands. You know, we charge them in some cases, and in other cases we don't, and I think it's historical. I think depending on the more recent one addition, like Hill Annex, they pay a fee, and I can't answer the question about what the percentage of the fee is. But generally, for public entities, we charge about 4 or 5%, and for private business, we charge about 8 or 9%, and it's somewhat negotiable depending on what the business can stand. So, so they are paying for Hill Annex, but they aren't paying for the other state parks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryce. Mr. Nelson, you want to proceed with your presentation, please?
I learned something, too. Another result that is in the conservation agenda is in regard to our visitor satisfaction. It is my job to defend the chronically mentally healthy. I make it my effort to try and put the satisfaction of our visitors at the highest level possible. We have a very motivated, spirited group of people who work for us. And as you might suspect, people who have come to state parks are looking for good times, enjoyable experiences, meaningful activities. And so we can set the bar quite high on this, and this is an area that we are anxious to improve upon in the upcoming years. I've talked quite a bit about our resource management activities. This is a graphic depiction of both our acreage that we are manipulating each year. This gets to the representative's question on how we're doing. The picture of the controlled burn is a typical picture for us in the spring or the fall. We have benchmarks that we evaluate. We send our people through training. We work with the state forestry officials and others, a number of others. And when we do our control burns, it is with the utmost concern for safety. Having said that, we have set about to increase our active restoration each year, and we have been quite successful at that. We are, again, this laboratory environment, if you will, within DNR, where we can control environments and try and return some of those lands to pre-settlement conditions. We can introduce new species that would have been a part of that landscape a couple hundred years ago or 1,000 years ago. We can work with our partners on establishing habitat We can protect threatened and endangered species. All of these things in partnership and all are activities that we are very proud of. Also, another results-oriented activity that we have is in outdoor education.
Mr. Nelson, we have another question, Representative Virginius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And your, with regard to resource management activities, we're talking about restoring to native habitat. One of the things that we have been told again and again, and I feel like a broken record on this because we can't get an answer, is that we have less than 1% of our native prairie species remaining in this state. What, how much do we have? Less than 1% is a huge number. What is it that we actually have that DNR actually has under its management, and what is left, and are, do we have a plan to either acquire or manage the remainder? Do you have that in a, I mean, I had looked in your strategic outcomes agenda, the last one that was published, and you had nothing about this, and there was something on prairie, on wetlands, but not on regular prairie.
Commissioner Holston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, your question is much broader than to just parks. I'm assuming you want to have a more comprehensive answer, not just to what parks is doing.
Well, my question,
Representative Wagenius,
who's responsible? I mean, I see in parks he's talking about restoration, and I see at the beginning he's talking about managing native species. Perhaps this isn't the person that is responsible, so then the question would be, who is responsible, and who should I ask the question of?
Commissioner Holton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, the best individual to ask will be Director Van Mueller from Ecological Services when we do that particular budget presentation, who's intimately involved in more of the day-to-day details of prairie native species restoration work. Not that other divisions are not. Not that Parks doesn't have an element within its mission to do some of that work. Not that Fish and Wildlife on some of its WMAs isn't in the business of doing that. But if there is a individual, it will be her. So do we want to save that debate till then where we can get some of those answers and questions?
Representative,
or do you want me to try to muddle through it without her?
No, I don't want you to try to muddle through it without her. But I think I have always, I didn't know that Ecological Services acquired land in a way that perhaps I'm being led to believe they do, and that's my mistake.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, yeah, the Native Prairie Bank easements, Fish and Wildlife, and Ecological Services work hand in hand. They share resources internally on those type of acquisitions. Okay. So it's
we'll ask later then.
It's a blend of activity. I would feel more confident in having this discussion when she and Fish and Wildlife are here, and we can bring the appropriate people for that debate.
He brought it up, and I was...
Yep, no, absolutely. Because all parks do that. I mean, they do have a... in some of the parks, that activity.
Representative, I would say that that is one of the highest priorities that we have in our parks, and we are very active. And we do have targets for those parks where we have completed resource management plans, and they vary from park to park. They vary around the state, whether it's old growth forest restoration in the north or prairie restoration in the southwest or savanna restoration in the deciduous zone. These are high efforts on our part, and we have very clear targets where we want to get to. But, of course, those end with our borders. That might be the other thing I would add. We are... bordered by essentially private land or public land, and our mission ends at those borders, although we work with our partners as much as we can.
Okay. Mr. Nelson?
Continuing on, Chairman, outdoor education is a very important part of our activity, and as you can see, our target there is what we are hoping to improve upon. Because of certain budget situations over the last number of years, we have had to downsize the number of staff that are involved in our public contact and principally in outdoor education and interpretation. But we have had an increase in visits to our visitor centers, so that 18% target has been fairly stable. I have personal goals that I would like to see this area improve significantly in the future, and as opportunities and revenues become available, this will be an issue that I would like to work on. We have about 1.3 million visitors who participate in our programs one way or another out of those 8 million visitors. Our statement that comes from our interpretive staff is having a state park without interpretive staff is like having the school without teachers. The concept there is that we have a number of individuals who are anxious to provide that learning opportunity for our park visitors, and it is a calling that we take very seriously.
Mr. Nelson, Representative Johnson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Nelson, this is one of the concerns I hear from my constituents a lot, is the decrease in outdoor education opportunities in state parks. Can you put a number on that? How much of a reduction has there been? I'm trying to get a sense of the extent to which there's been this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have had a reduction of approximately 8 full-time and 12 seasonal interpretive positions. We have had some loss of public contact hours in terms of the entrance stations and the visitor centers. We have reduced 20 managers, 20 assistant managers to 80% of their time, and that equates to a loss of public contact. So those are the three primary areas we've had a reduction over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And those were decisions that we made based on the realities of our budget situation. And as one might suspect, where there have been a significant reduction, it's an area that we have of great concern. I mentioned our historic features. I will proceed quickly, Mr. Chairman. I mentioned our historic features. We do have a very, very big responsibility for protecting our archaeological and cultural resources within the state. This conservation agenda target has that we increase our capital maintenance. Up on the North Shore, we have literally hundreds of buildings and bridges and water fountains and structures that come from an earlier era that are beautiful, lovely buildings that demand a lot of attention, a lot of work, and a lot of effort. And that representation is pretty typical all around the state. We have full-time archaeologists who have to do the preparatory work prior to any kind of construction. We are making progress with our educational institutions. We will soon be signing a partnership with St. Cloud State to provide some services at CAFIO, and we hope to do that with UMD, Morehead State, and one of the state schools in southern Minnesota. So we're positive, again, as relates to natural resource management. We don't always get done what we would like to get done, but with the tools we have, we do as well as we can. We are meeting all of the state and the federal laws. We have no violations that are in place. But it is a very time-consuming and expensive part of our responsibilities, the cultural and archaeological responsibilities that we have.
Mr. Nelson, Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nelson, these 360 archaeological sites. Now, do you have you work with the State Historical Society on identifying those, or are these marked? I guess I'm just want a little information on that, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is exactly the case. The individuals who work on this are actually employed by the Historical Society.
We pay for their salaries, but they are under the guidance and supervision of them. We are, in most cases, well aware of where the previous habitation existed and where the archaeological problems might arise, but it is a tedious, time-consuming, endless task. And with each new opportunity, whether it's to put a trail in or a road or relocate something within a park, we have to do a clearance on that property to make sure that we are not destroying some archaeological sites that have been previously been unaware of.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Nelson. Again, of these 360 sites in a year, do you have any idea how many are they're doing active research on?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would say relatively few where we're doing active research. Most of the work of the archaeologists is in the early steps of preparing for some kind of construction development, road alignment, that type of an activity. We do have contracts, for instance, up at CAFIO with educational institutions where research is going on, so that many of these sites are being looked at, but not by our staff, if I get your question correctly. Yeah.
Mr. Representative Erdo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your answers, Mr. Nelson. And just kind of on an unrelated topic, I want to thank the parks for providing Sibley State Park, where I train my cross-country team each year for the last 25 years. And we've only lost one runner in those years, but we did find her.
Well, Chairman, Representative, thank you for that compliment. Appreciate it.
Mr. Nelson, Representative Johnson has a question.
Mr. Nelson, just on the maintenance of some of these historic buildings and structures, is there a backlog in any sense on deferred maintenance for these particular structures? Are you all up to date on it? What's the status of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we do have a sizable backlog both in our regular infrastructure in the park, water, sewer, power, roads, as well as these historic facilities. What we try and do is, if it's a structure, we try and make sure the roof is intact so that there isn't further deterioration until we can get the capital dollars to go in to renovate. If it is, for instance, down at Miniopa, the bridge that crosses that chasm down there where the river comes in, that's a historic structure and it's used every day. And we have desires to get that bridge fixed to historical standards. That would be an example of an ongoing issue. I would use the rough analogy, members, that it's like a manufacturing plant or like a farm, that every year there are things that are wearing out, and you never get things fixed completely. There is a progression of wear and tear, and that no amount of preventative maintenance can keep up with or keep up to. We have the need annually of somewhere between $3 and $4 million a year in maintenance dollars in order to do our accelerated maintenance program, to make a dent, an improvement in the protection of the historic structures, and also to handle the special things that come up if we have a flood or there is a water pump that blows up. What I'm referring to here, members, is that we, during particularly the busy months of the year, we run about 72 small cities. We have sewer lines, we have water lines, we have power, we have restrooms, we have roads, we have people issues. And so our time and effort in the off-season is trying to shore up that infrastructure. Our time and effort in the off-season is trying to shore up that infrastructure largely so that during the summer season it operates. But we, like your home or your city, we have episodes or incidents where things fatigue, wear out, and we've got to get out and fix them.
Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that, Mr. Nelson. My concern is that, you know, like a home or whatever, that this stuff is all kept up to speed, and that, you know, for the next generation of my kids and my kids' kids, that we're taking care of business now on the basic maintenance. And I just hope you're as forthright as possible on what are some of the expenses. If they're not being taken care of, I think we have an obligation to meet them at this point in time. So I appreciate any information you could give me relative to what is being deferred, and so we can pay attention.
Chairman, Representative, we'll certainly get you that information. I would want to add that we do appreciate our partner in this, which is Department of Natural Resources. Their facility maintenance team essentially is a group of individuals who helps us put bids out to do the analysis of all of these projects, and they work hand in glove with us. But it is expensive, and it is a big part of our responsibility. I would also want to add that we are looking at eliminating those buildings that do not have historic values, but that one way or another were built in the past and is just square footage, and we one way or another have to come up with the monthly cost to operate them. And so we will be looking at those type of situations and try and get out of some costs for non-significant buildings and structures.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, one of the items you mentioned in deferred maintenance was sewage. And, of course, we are now really concentrating with Representative Osmond's bill on maintaining our waters. And I think probably the first group to have responsibility for that has got to be the state. What's your deferred maintenance in sewage?
Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't have a number for you. Let me describe typical situations. We have a number of parks that are hooked up to sewer companies where the effluent is taken and treated at a sewage plant of some type. We have a number of parks that are isolated. Because of their location, we use drain fields, and those are put into place and maintained at the highest standards. We also have other situations where it is a problem. We have pumping systems and delivery systems that are old and fatigued, and we need to be about the business of getting them fixed. As I have been here a year, I have only had one case where it has been presented to me that we have got to get something fixed right away, and that is on our capital development list for this upcoming summer, I believe. But I am sure behind the scenes there are some other situations that, as I mentioned earlier, just because of the age of some of these facilities, are going to need to be evaluated and looked at.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you. I think it would be helpful if you could get to us your deferred maintenance or what you expect maybe over the next 5 years. So as we are looking at the impaired waters, we have this as a piece of the pie that's got to be resolved and figure out how what the state owns is part of this and how we resolve it. So if you could help us by bringing that information to the committee, I think that would be good.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I will do that. The one project that I mentioned is up at Father Hennepin, and that's $250,000 municipal sewer connection. So in that case, this will be a permanent solution to our environment up there, and one that we would hope to achieve in as many cases as possible.
Okay. Mr. Nelson, you may proceed.
Okay, please. This pie chart, members, represents the appropriations that comes to state parks. As Deputy Director Holston reviewed, these are the major categories that we have for our funding. It is probably fair to say that the general fund support at 50% has diminished over the last number of years. That has been balanced out by some new revenue opportunities that with legislative and gubernatorial support we have embarked on. That's generally contained in that special revenue fund that you see in the yellow. We have smaller amounts of dollars that are included from the Environment and Natural Resource and a little bit of federal money. The effort that we are working with several of our partners is to try and expand our revenue-generating opportunities at a realistic rate. And I need to use an example to explain that. We are always in a discussion about how we can generate more revenue, but at the same time, how we can provide low-cost recreation opportunities to our citizens. And it's a very healthy dialogue. If you would envision it as a boat with twin propellers, twin screws. One of them is the revenue-driving propeller. The other is the propeller that provides inexpensive recreational and park opportunities for people, and we always have to balance those. We are not in competition with the private sector. We provide unique opportunities around the state. We spend hours and hours talking about revenue, when we are at a point of buyer resistance, what are some new opportunities. I think the point that I would want to make is that with the future cost factors that we will have as just being a part of state government, that there will be a limit to what we can do with revenues. We pay about, from all sources, about 40-some percent of our way, but we will not be able to move to a level where we will be self-sufficient or anything even close to that, not with the responsibilities that we have, and keeping in mind that we are intended to keep low-cost recreation or low-cost park visitation, I should say, a part of our mission. We are going to be lowering our costs in some areas. We are going to be looking at satellite and seasonal operations where we have full-time employees. We are going to be taking some time to make that shift so that those individuals who are currently at those parks will have a chance to continue their career. But it is a step that I believe we have to take. Most of our visitation at those type of parks comes from sometime in April or May to the mid-fall. And I do not believe that on the budget side we can continue to keep full-time individuals in those parks. We're looking at anywhere from 12 to 18 facilities. On the positive side, there are collaborative efforts where we can help each other out. We can provide more hours of employment, which means more staff service and work completed during the summer months when we are there. It is one of the core issues that I think we're going to have to deal with here in the next few years. How do we both control our costs as well as have reasonable revenue expectations? So, Mr. Chairman, I know there's a lot of
Mr. Nelson, there's a couple of questions in front of us here. Representative Pennis has a question first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nelson, out of the total budget for the parks, what percent, roughly, do park permits account for, I mean, in revenue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, our vehicle permits for 04 was about $3.7 million, and that was 28.5%. Our camping permits were $3.7 million, and our overnight accommodations that we have in some of our parks was about another 13%, principally the overnight facilities at Itasca Lodge, or at Itasca, including the Douglas Lodge. So in the neighborhood of 61-62% from our day use permits, our overnight camping, and the revenues that come from our lodge and cabin activities.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Nelson, I'd like to, if you could work with Mr. Reinholtz and give us a better description as to where the revenues are coming from and also the revenues are going to, so that we get a clear picture. For example, off of this, I can't tell where the LCMR dollars fit in on that particular picture. We don't have a description of the park dollars or the park sticker dollars as to how they're coming into it and which funds they're going to and then where they're going out from. So a little more detail on the money coming in and the money going out would be appreciated.
Representative Bill, did you have a question? Oh, excuse me. Representative Dunkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to represent Osmond, I see the budget. This is a nice overview, and I appreciate it. At what point are we going to, Representative Osmond, get into more detail? I mean, I'm looking at the budget books, which we haven't even referred to at this point. Are they coming back? Are we going to have them back when we have the actual bill in front of us to go line by line? Or are we, I mean, he just threw up $77.4 million and on page 105 in the budget book, last year that same number was $86.4 million. So I want to know what happened to the $9 million, what's being cut, more specifics like you just asked for, which parts are being cut, where are the people going to be taken from, are you increasing fees and entrance gate fees and sticker fees? So I guess, Representative Osmond, maybe to you, when would we expect to get more detailed information from the department on this and other things?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dunkey, my suggestion is that when you have them in front of you, you get the answers you're looking for.
So, Mr. Chair, then I guess, were you going to go to the budget book at some time, Representative Holst, or Deputy Commissioner Holston and the manager? Are we going to get into some detail with your presentations over the next 3 days on the actual budget books? I mean, I love the overview, and it's great, but when do we get to the meat and potatoes here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, that is where we're going right now,
okay.
Into those budgetary details. It was our impression that the committee, because of the variety of new members to the committee and to these particular areas, a little bit more background detail was necessary. If it's too much detail, let us know. We'll surely cut out the details and get right to the numbers.
I was the able background to, too.
Yeah. I was pretty much able to get through in about a day and a half in the Senate, just focusing in on the numbers. So we can clip through very quickly, but I think it's the delicate nature and the complexity of this particular budget requires a lot more background information and you understanding how those things weave together. It's our intention to move forward now and talk more about the numbers and some of the policy issues around some of those numbers. Some of your more detailed questions as it relates to previous budgets, we may have to come back and answer some of those at a later date in those relationships.
Representative Osmond. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I think that because we're not really sure as to what the background of members are, we need that overview to just make sure we don't have gaps. At the same time, we're going to want to get into detail, and it may, as we bring up questions, I think we need to present those questions. They may not be able to be answered right now, and we would expect the department to come back with more detailed answers. But I do believe the questions need to flow forward at this point.
Thank you.
And
Commissioner Holston,
move into that direction. Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, to your previous question of the last year's biennial budget and this year's biennial budget, you will find throughout the agency where dollars have been attributed to the agency but are actually passed through, that large reduction that you saw or difference between the this biennium and the upcoming biennium reflects an accounting shift of pass-through dollars that used to go to metropolitan parks. They're no longer contained within our state parks budget documents. They are now in a separate item, so that shows a dramatic change or difference, and we can talk about more of that in detail. I just wanted to point that out specifically. You'll find roughly out of this biennial budget roughly $60 million that are pass-through dollars that are attributed to the Department of Natural Resources that are used by other units of government, other activities that we don't actually control or have much involvement in. So,
go ahead, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, as the budget highlights, we have roughly a $77.4 million biennial budget for the Department of Natural Resources. That is both the direct open and statutory appropriations. As I talked previously, Parks has, as you see on this particular pie chart, three particular items. That is the Natural Resources Fund. That is, again, where those park sticker fees, camping fees, and those revenues are deposited, and also the general fund. Under the governor's budget recommendations, he is not making a recommendation for any reductions in general fund, but to the same level of as the last previous year, last previous biennium at the same level, current level.
Representative McGinnis.
Let me just just make sure I heard what you said right. There's no recommendation for any change. The dollar amount is the same that you're asking for from the general fund this year that you had 2 years ago. Is that what you just said?
Mr. Chair, Representative McGinnis, yes, our biennial general fund recommendation is the same for the next biennium as this current biennium.
Okay. Since there is some amount of inflation, can you tell us where inflation has impacted you and then what you have done to, what have you cut to make up for that inflation?
Mr. Holston?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, in state parks, that figure is about 4% per year. That's what we map out at. And we,
inflation?
For inflationary. And that's principally the cost of our staff, if you add together all of those factors, health care and salaries and promotional opportunities, whatever. That is about $800,000 plus in our agency annually. So either by cutting costs or raising revenues or finding new dollars or increasing the sales of merchandise, we are able for 06 to predict that we will come in at about that level where our sources of revenue will match the cost of being in business that would include that inflationary measure of 4%. For the 07 budget, we will again have that same 4% challenge, and we will be hard put to answer that without some other extreme measures.
Representative McGinnis?
But that's exactly what we need to know. What is it that, to make up this $800,000 in 06, $800,000 is what you said, right? So then it would be another $800,000 plus in 07. Or, so it seems to me that that's a fair amount of money and that we should be able to see these are the things that are going to be cut in order to reach that, and these are the outcomes that will change because of those cuts. Is that a fair question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is. And I think the short answer for now is that we will have to have a reduction in our full-time staff. We will have to have a reduction in some hours of operations, and we will have to, as I mentioned earlier, go to some seasonal satellite operations in some areas. We can also expect that we will have an increase in visitation and revenue from some of the programs that we are currently putting into place. And so we would hope to have a better revenue picture, even though we are not completely sure about what those numbers would be. Obviously, we are dependent on a number of factors. But the short answer would be either we will have to cut some of our operating costs or we are going to have to expect a very aggressive revenue situation.
Representative McGinnis?
I think what we're asking and what Representative Junkie has asked and what I'm asking is we really would like to see some of the specifics, where the cuts coming, who's, what hours are going to be shortened.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, we will do that.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner Holston,
Representative Lagunias, one of the areas just that we'll be able to articulate for you is in the area of camping. Many of our parks run camping in one park is across our entire system is treated equally, and reducing services in low service parks, especially on the shoulder season, being able to leave parks open for on the shoulder season, spring and fall, we'll be able to do that. But the expectation I'm not talking about all parks. I'm talking about the lower. We have the ability to articulate which parks have lower uses. Go in there, allow camping to continue in that particular park. But at the same time, the user may not have the same expectation for level of service. Running hot water, somebody on staff 24 hours a day, those types of things will be some of those cost-saving measures that we'll be able to articulate for you.
Representative Bergenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand where you're going. I think it's just that when we explain this to our colleagues,
yes,
we need to be able to say, this campground is going to go from these hours to this to these hours. This is going to happen. What are the specifics that we can say to our colleagues? This is going to happen.
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that.
Okay.
Representative, one thing I'm hedging and dodging is that there are some union rules that have to be followed with regards to notification. So I cannot be as specific as you would like me to be at this point in time, because individuals have to be notified in the appropriate way of any intended plan that would change their work status. So I have to be a little obtuse about this, or have to be fairly general about the specifics of where this might occur, because we have some union issues that are involved in that.
Representative Osmond, to this
thank
point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at this point, I think that also members, as we're looking at the bigger picture, we don't like to get into the management of the department itself with regard to specifics. I don't think we weren't elected to actually run the parks. We're active. Elected to provide the state support that's needed, and so it's more that the line by line type of activity will be easier for us to debate and to discuss when the governor comes out with a supplemental budget, and we're able then to have a line by line documents before. So it'll be easier for some of this more detailed questioning at that point. But as far as the general concepts as to what areas you're really concerned about. This budget, like I was asking, where is the money coming from, where is the money going to, those type of things, make sure you get those questions out. But we do plan to go to more detailed line-by-line type of documentation when that's appropriate.
Representative Junkie.
Two quick questions, maybe more broad. Are there any fee increases proposed for the parks? Annual permits.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the Commissioner signed the fees and charges order in January, which makes a modest adjustment, to those fees that the Commissioner has purview over, and that will generate, in the aggregate, about $300,000 in new revenue, we believe. We do not have before you this year any new camping or day use fees, which is in your purview. We will likely bring you a package next year that will help in some ways solve this revenue issue.
And Mr. Chair, secondly, Representative Osmond gave one of his pet peeves earlier with the lottery funds. One of my pet peeves, and I guess I want an update on it, is who's doing our reservations now for state parks? Is it still being done out of this state? And what dollars are we spending for that? I mean, how many Minnesota ballots? Number one, is it being done elsewhere than Minnesota? I think it was done in California or something, Representative Holston, in the past. And where is it being done now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we are in the fourth year of a five-year contract with an outfit in Rapid City, and they are the primary service provider in this part of the country. As oft happens in the corporate world, they have been bought and sold a couple of different times. I think that happened again last month, but they have provided a good service to us. There is no cost to the state of the reservation system. That is borne by the individuals who make reservations. That's part of the fee package that we pass on to those individuals who take advantage of it.
Mr. Chair, do you know how much a fee is?
Representative Junkie.
Reserve a campsite in Minnesota by calling Rapid City, South Dakota.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's $7.50.
Additional.
Yes.
Representative Bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Of the $800,000 problem that you have identified with Representative Bugenius, the $300,000 is going to come off that, so your net is $500,000 problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's true.
Thank you.
Members, at this time, we'll adjourn for today. We'll expect these fine folks back again tomorrow as we continue the DNR week, and also remind you to keep your folders in your materials in your folder to keep for the rest of the week. With that, members, we're adjourned for today.